bill signing ceremony on equal pay law in the governor's office. There's press there. And when I was in the news business, someone warned me that you never want to get between a camera and a politician. So some people will be coming in the next few minutes. We're honored today to have a presentation from of the Oregon Business Plan. The chair of that plan is Patrick Kreitzer. He's the president and the CEO of the Tillamook County Creamery Association. And so we're going to call him up for his testimony and go from there.
Co-chairs Haas and Barnhart and members of the committee, thank you for having me today. My name is Patrick Kreitzer. I'm the president and CEO of the Tillamook County Creamery Association and also serve as chair of the steering committee of the Oregon Business Plan. Thank you for the invitation to present our thoughts for addressing the state's fiscal puzzle, which of course includes, as you know, record revenues from a robust economy, yet projected deficits for the foreseeable future. I'll share with you our framework and outline our specific policy preferences for cost containment and new revenue to put state budgets on a more sustainable path going forward. The Oregon Business Plan was conceived more than 15 years ago with encouragement from Oregon's senior Senator Ron Wyden and the Oregon Business Council in partnership with a number of other business associations and businesses across the state. Has staffed and organized our annual leadership summit to discuss and develop the Oregon business community's public policy agenda. At last December's leadership summit, our clear priority and the singular focus of the leadership summit was addressing the state's structural deficit, which was a unique approach for the leadership summit. The summit, of course, came just weeks after the costly and bruising ballot fight over Measure 97. So a second priority for us then and now is avoiding a similar polarizing ballot fights in the future. At the leadership summit, we offered a three-part policy framework At the leadership summit, we offered a three-part framework for addressing Oregon's fiscal challenges. First, grow the economy. As each quarterly forecast since May of 2015 has made clear, a growing economy is the most reliable way to generate revenue for public services in the state. Second, to identify and curb the growth of cost drivers that are growing faster than revenues. And third, adjusting taxes to make investments with measurable outcomes, especially in education and in healthcare. From the beginning of the Oregon Business Plan, our role has been to provide policy counsel to state leaders like yourselves. The hard work of lawmaking, of course, belongs to you. We recognize how steep the hill is that Oregonians, including us, are asking you to climb. We know resolving problems decades in the making is asking a lot of you, and we are grateful for the opportunity to engage in discussions with you as you wrestle with the challenge of taking input from many others and shaping it into legislation. What we are outlining today are our policy preferences, and our hope is to engage with you and other legislators in these final weeks of the legislative session to get past partisan and special interest divisions to do what we collectively believe is the right thing for Oregon. As we look at the state's budget situation, as we look at the state's budget situations, our intention to work with key objectives, work towards key objectives in support of our shared vision for Oregon. The first of those is to preserve critical state services, notably the funding gains that have put us at average per student funding in education in the country, and also the Medicaid expansion, which we fully support and believe is important for the welfare of Oregonians across the state. The second objective is additional education funding to help kids read by the third grade, to help students graduate high school, and to help students attend and graduate complete college. The third goal for our fiscal strategy is to avoid damaging ballot measure fights so we can all work together to achieve better outcomes for Oregonians. The legislature is the right place to grapple with these complex budgetary and policy questions and challenges, and we'd like to see that done with the broad support done here rather than at the ballot. Last year, recognizing the looming budget issues posed by increasing PERS rates driving up costs, the Oregon Business Council hired an economist to build a state budget policy model that had been discussed for years, but that had never been built. It's a tool that allows a high-level look at major cost drivers and policy options. And the tool shows plainly the impact in future biennia of budget decisions made in the current session. The model helped us better understand key drivers of unsustainable costs, growth, and focus on policy recommendations to address those unsustainable cost drivers. Important work has also been done this session by legislators looking closely at cost drivers, and we are very encouraged by their work. Governor Kate Brown has said she and her staff are working on substantial cost containment proposals as well, and we applaud that the work being done and look forward to seeing the specific proposals on cost containment. We've shared the budget model that we built with many of you and with many other legislators and other key stakeholders throughout the state. We've also shared it with business leaders and businesses around the state, using it as an opportunity to have discussion and gain their input not only on cost containment but also on tax increase options. Their feedback has guided the policy preferences that I'm going to share with you today. We believe that it's essential that the structural spending problems be addressed in this session. Bending the cost curve now will provide long-term benefits to students, long-term funding for critical services and education, and to protect Oregon's vulnerable citizens. Last week, legislative leaders lamented the lack of votes on key revenue measures. We think cost containment and a balanced budget are essential complements to support discussions about new revenues. So here's the problem. Baseline expenditures, including some large key cost drivers, are growing at a rate higher than revenues are forecasted to grow, and there's no end to this in the foreseeable future. Our model and our analysis has shown us that, although not easy, the budget can be balanced through a combination of cost containment and Medicaid solutions that can both balance the current budget and change the trajectory of the state. These things, the key drivers that can be used to balance the budget include controlling growth in the cost of PERS, controlling growth in state employee health care costs, criminal justice reform, additional operating cost control that many legislators and the governor have been talking about, which we're supportive of and anxious to see the analysis on, and then Medicaid solutions, which of course include maximizing federal Medicaid match and implementing some form of provider tax to raise new revenues. So why are we focused on these particular items as cost drivers? As you all have undoubtedly seen, PERS is forecasted to grow at about 140% over the next four biennium, with Medicaid growing at 134%, while revenue and the lottery or general lottery fund revenue is expected to grow at 40%. This is an unsustainable rate of growth in large costs at the state level. PERS employer rates are projected to become, just in a short number of years, projected to become over 30% of total payroll. The state, of course, is no different than other employers who deal with escalating health care costs and the challenge of funding those health care the PERS rate. You know, what we can see here is an increase from 17% to over 30%, and the burden on the state is substantial with that increase. I mentioned health care. The state, of course, is dealing with the increase in cost of providing health care to its employees. Like any private business or any of the private businesses, we're also dealing with that. Current employer contribution to employee health care is at about 150% of national average. And then on corrections, our corrections spending is well above per capita, is well above national average, and in fact higher than on a per capita basis than 40 other states. So our coalition is prepared to support new revenue for investments, investments that are aimed at important outcomes. And we have found that this concept is widely supported by the business community across the state. With a balanced budget, new revenues can fund critical additional programs in education, including age 3 to grade 3 literacy, K-3 student success, which could include their K-12 student success, which includes CTE and improved high school graduation rates envisioned by Measure 97, and then additional funding to improve post-secondary affordability, access, student retention, and degree completion. We remain optimistic that the budget riddle can be solved this session and that programs like these can be funded. However, we're realistic enough to realize that with only a few weeks left and with many interests reluctant to step forward with a plan, it's difficult to see how all these issues can be resolved in the few weeks remaining in this session. We're laying out for you our policy preferences to show our willingness to join you in putting the state's fiscal house in order. Co-Chair Haas has provided important leadership to the discussion of revenue options. We thank you for your leadership, Co-Chair Haas. Your proposal for a corporate activity tax clearly demonstrates how much better a legislatively crafted plan can be than one that's drafted with the intention of passing a ballot. However, we don't believe the corporate activity tax is a practical option this session. Its resemblance to Measure 97 and the limited time availability to fully vet the impacts of such a significant change on businesses in all industries and in all parts of the state make it hard to see how it could pass. We think adjustments to the current tax code can provide resources needed for investments in the 2017 to 2019 budget. Our coalition believes adjustments to the current corporate income tax, refining the 2013 pass-through tax cut, eliminating commercial property tax early payment discounts, and a healthcare premium tax, a combination of these existing taxes and moves that can be made can provide the necessary funding for the education priorities that we listed and the kind of additional education investment that we noted there. While we think these are the most likely sources of additional revenue, I know that there are various specific proposals in some of these areas that are being discussed today. This is not an endorsement of any of those specific proposals. However, it's a commitment to work with this committee as well as House and Senate Revenue Committees on a range of options for revenues to invest in this biennium. We also support the appointment of an interim committee like this one to review Oregon's entire tax structure with all elements and all options on the table, to recommend structural tax reforms to a future legislative session. We encourage the appointment of such a committee to begin its work as early as this summer. In summary, we believe the budget, based on our analysis and policy work that we've done, we believe the budget can be balanced through a combination of cost containment and Medicaid solutions. And with meaningful cost containment, there is a broad and varied base of business support for raising revenue to fund critical education initiatives. And as we have been doing for several months now, we are interested in working with elected leaders to share our to achieve our shared objectives for the state. The business community is serious about its willingness to work with you and other legislative leaders to resolve the vexing fiscal problems facing Oregon. Others of our coalition are here in the room this morning, and many more are watching across the state. The resources and insights of our coalition are at your disposal. What we've outlined isn't a proposal so much as a possible approach. It's expressed in the context of the work that we've done over the past year to guide our policy preferences. We are at this table, but if this fiscal puzzle is to be solved, there will need to be a larger table where all the interests can work together on our shared responsibility to contain costs, address new revenues, and do the right things for Oregon. Thank you for the opportunity to present our policy preferences and our position this morning.
Thank you very much, Patrick. Let me just get perspective a little bit. I really appreciate your comments. When you speak of the business community, what are we talking about now? Because we have gone down the road a little bit on this approach, and we have been working with businesses who support the direction we're going, at least, if not a final product. And then others don't, and you clearly don't. And things have changed a lot over the last few years in the business community. So can you would very much appreciate your candor here, and we're all trying to bring Oregon together. What is the business community?
Co-Chair Haas, thank you for the question, and I appreciate the question about the business community. So of course the business community is not a homogeneous kind of entity, and there are varied interests and levels of engagement with the state challenge and processes and varying approaches to evaluating the impact on individual businesses, and also to engaging and supporting the hard work that you all are doing to find a path forward for Oregon. So when I refer to we, and when I talk about the business community in the context of the policy preferences that I'm representing here, I'm talking about the broad coalition organized to support the business plan framework that I shared at the Oregon Leadership Summit in December, and that since then has engaged with us to be supportive of the process you all are engaged in to resolve this budget situation. So specifically, many of the statewide business associations, Associated Oregon Industries, Oregon Business Association, the merger of those two Oregon business industries, or Oregon OBI, the Portland Business Alliance, Oregon Business Council, many of the industry associations, many of the local chambers, and many individual businesses from across different sectors and across the state. So certainly don't want to sit here and attempt to claim that I'm representing every business in the state, because that's clearly not the case. Like in any broad group, folks have different opinions and different approaches and different interests. But I will say what I've been encouraged by over the last several months and really year leading up to the November election was the level of engagement broadly across the business community as everyone attempts to assess kind of how they can play a meaningful and productive role in the process that's happening here. So again, when I say we or talk about business community in the context of what I've proposed here, I'm talking about the coalition, using the term Brighter Oregon, that's been formed to support the business plan framework.
Thank you. Questions, Senator Riley.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. So I was getting prepared to ask you questions about your plan, but there is no plan, so that's not an easy thing to do. It's really difficult to assess, your priority, your positions, when there isn't a plan attached to them. And we've been working. You pointed out that there's not enough time to vet the impact of the plan that we're trying to put together. But we've been working on it for several years now, trying to figure this out. It's not as if we just now started, you know, 3 months ago. We have done a lot of vetting. We have Dr. Warner and his staff doing a lot of work, and they've done a yeoman's work to figure out what's the best play, how is this going to affect the economy, how is it going to affect businesses, how is it going to affect people. And, you know, these are things that we take very seriously. So I just wanted to say that, you know, we've been working on a plan, a real plan, and it's hard work. And our staff has, as I say, done yeoman's work to give us their best vision of how this will affect everybody in the state. And I think it's time that we actually do something as opposed to another committee.
Co-chairs Haas and Barnhart and Senator Riley, I appreciate those comments. Thank you, and thanks for the opportunity to comment on them. I very much and can represent a broad opinion from the business community, as we discussed earlier. Very much appreciate the work that's been done going forward. I recognize that it's work that's been done over several years, as you mentioned. I recognize it's very difficult work. There's no easy answer here. It's complex, and in no way was attempting to diminish the tremendous amount of work that's been done on this very complex issue. What I'm here to say is that we are interested in being part of the solution. We are interested in engaging with you as you develop real, meaningful solutions to this challenge. We have commissioned a tremendous amount of policy work and analysis, and we would like to bring that to bear and to be helpful in this process. We recognize that you're being asked to do some really difficult work here that's addressing a problem that's the result of decades-old decisions, and applaud that work that's going on. And the position that I represented here is that we don't think there's enough time left in this legislative session to fully vet a corporate activities tax. However, we do think that there are a set of tax options that, while, you know, not easy, certainly difficult, and in some cases painful, can be brought to bear to address the current budget forecast shortfall, and that we are also very interested in engaging, as you would have us, in the longer term solution that clearly you've been working on and done a lot of great work on over years.
Well, I appreciate that, and look forward to seeing some of those policy options that you talk about, real ones.
Representative Smith.
Thank you, Mr. Co-chair. And thank you for your leadership. I appreciate it. Sir, it's good having you here today, and I appreciate all you do and the work of your staff. Your staff's been in my office multiple times having conversations on both revenue and cost containment. I'm not sure if it's a question, but more perhaps of a statement. As I look at your slides, especially those regarding balancing the budget, these are issues that we've been tackling for a long time. And if there was a simple answer on how to control the growth in PERS costs, knowing that we're constitutionally limited, I think we would have done it. And I would just share very, very, very briefly. My background's commercial finance. I thought I knew finance until I went and sat down with bond counselors and had a question on PERS reform, and I realized I know nothing compared to this expertise. And so I guess that's more of a question. Let me flip it back to a question. At what level is the business community prepared to engage in solutions to help a citizen legislature? My background's finance. I know I can't solve the PERS problem, but I'm tasked with that solution. How are we going to bring the best and brightest from Oregon's business community to the table to bring us real solutions, not just a statement that says control growth and PERS.
Co-chairs Haas and Barnhart and Representative Smith, thank you for the question. I, you know, we have certainly ramped up our investment in policy, as you've seen, sounds like in your office, ramped up our investment in analysis and policy evaluation and development over the last several months. You know, when we, you know, certainly the business community was fairly unified around this idea that Measure 97 was the wrong solution to the state's fiscal situation, and so we, you know, we mobilized and unified fairly strongly around that, and immediately, you know, after that November election, accepted and acknowledged our obligation to not just be about no, but be about the solutions. And so since then have significantly ramped up our investment in the development of policy and analysis. And, you know, one of the things that I hope you'll hear from me today is that work and additional work that needs to be done in whatever format is fully available to this committee and to others, whether it be as we have done vetting specific choices and specific policies, the legality of various actions, and, you know, and beyond the financial and legal implications, but also the human implications. We very much, you know, PERS gets a lot of attention. I understand that. We very much value and appreciate the critical service of state employees and teachers and firefighters and others throughout the state that are implicated and impacted by these decisions, and understand that there's difficult decisions to be made here. So on all of those fronts, we're very interested in putting at your, you know, at your full access and full disposal all of the effort and additional efforts if they're needed, additional investments if they're needed. It's no secret we spent a lot of money arguing over this Measure 97, and we'd rather invest our time and energy and expertise and financial resources in supporting the hard work that you all are doing to develop these difficult solutions. As you point out, there's no easy answers.
So just, Mr. Chair, I guess, just as a follow-up, I would hope each one of us as committee chairs would take Patrick up on his offer to bring in some of this bright talent that's out there to complement the great staff we have. But it's always great to have a third party come in and offer expertise as well. Thank you.
Thank you, Representative Marsh.
Thank you. Patrick, thank you for being here. As Senator Riley noted, what you've given us is more what I would describe as broad strokes than a specific plan. But I do want to hone in on, at a very high level on what you presented to make sure that I understand it. What I heard you say is a suggestion of revenue adjustments that could bring in $500 million. We have a budget deficit right now, as we understand it, of $1.4 billion. Some of the money that you've suggested, the property tax, I believe will go to local government. So are you suggesting a billion-dollar cut in our budget?
Co-chairs Haas and Barnhart and Representative Marsh, thank you for the question, and I appreciate the opportunity to clarify. We, through our analysis, we believe that through a combination of cost containment and the Medicaid solutions that are on the table, which include a variety of different tactics, including, for example, you know, optimizing federal match dollars and raising additional revenues to support the Medicaid expansion, that through the combination of those two things, the $1.4 billion budget deficit can be closed, which of course includes the funding of Measure 98 within that $1.4 billion. We're not suggesting that there are specific or that there are that cost cutting is the only way to close that, but that there's really great work happening that we've been involved in with our healthcare industry partners and with others in terms of how do we address the Medicaid funding hole. And I also appreciate your comment about policy About the kind of broad strokes. What I presented here is broad strokes rather than a specific plan. In sort of that is our signal to support and work on the specific implementation of these types of, you know, this type of framework or these types of concepts or policy preferences. Certainly, in deference to the as was mentioned, the great expertise that exists within the legislature and staff here, I don't want to be presumptive in terms of bringing the specific, you know, specific solution, but we're as I described earlier, interested in and fully committed to being engaged in developing those specific solutions in rapid fashion.
Representative Noss.
I think Representative Marsh has my question on pass.
Okay. Princess Smith Warner.
Why, thank you, Mr. Co-Chair. Patrick, thank you for being here. I'm sorry that I missed a big chunk of your presentation, but I was just down the hall passing a state school fund budget that I'm not happy with. And I got to say, it's June 1st. It's my birthday, hence the crown. And I'm a little troubled that at a time when this committee is about to look at version 12 of a simulation on a tax reform proposal that is significant, that will match economic growth, that deals with a whole number of issues and looks very comprehensively, that you would come in here and say that there's not enough time to vet any proposal. When we are on version 12, when we have been working on this very hard all session in any number of conversations and rooms, the idea that there is the same thing that I could have found in the business plan in December, maybe even the 2 years ago business plan, without any further details. I just, you know, we have been working hard at putting together an actual legislative proposal. As I said, we're up to, I think we're going to see version 12 today of the simulation. And I find that very frustrating, and it does not feel like coming to the table willing to be a partner in good faith.
Co-Chairs Haas and Barnhart, and happy birthday, Representative Smith Warner.
I'm 50 today, if I hadn't mentioned that.
I appreciate your comments, and I very much appreciate the tremendous amount of work that's gone into this issue this session and in previous years and sessions, and the fact that it's a big, complicated problem that you've inherited and that you're dealing with. And your focus on education and your interest in creating economic stability for the state and adequate funding for education and other vital services going forward. We share those objectives. I appreciate the opportunity very much to be invited to be here in front of you today. We would like to be constructive, helpful participants in the process that you're going through. I think what we have done is developed a broad consensus from a large number of businesses and business associations across the state that with cost control, we're interested in supporting additional revenues for education. I understand that you've been working hard on solutions that I'm sitting here saying that we don't think there's time to adequately vet. That's ultimately a decision for you to make, and so I don't want to be insulting in any way or presumptive about that. But that's our assessment of the situation. And you know, my message today is at this point in time where we are, however we can be helpful, we would like to be helpful.
Representative Johnson.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. Appreciate that. Patrick, thanks for being here. I appreciate the time and effort that went into your presentation. You are the first business input we've actually had in front of this committee. We've had some great presentations from Dr. Warner and his staff on the grocery receipts tax, which have given us, I think, a theoretical overview of what it would mean to go from a traditional corporate income tax to a different sort of taxation. And in your testimony, you talk about the difficulty in vetting that. Could you just talk, you know, from a business perspective, and you obviously you knew it as well as anybody in the building, but the the processes and the calculations that need to happen, I guess, for business to really vet moving from one system of taxation to another, and why we really do need to take our time and do this in a way that can enable folks like you and to continue to be profitable, continue to be contributors to Oregon's economy.
Co-chairs Hassan, Barnhart, and Representative Johnson, thank you for the question. I want to acknowledge that the work that that this committee has done, and that as I understand it, Co-Chair has led around developing specific solutions, has been great work. Is thoughtful and logical, and I understand that there's a lot of careful consideration going into understanding how various tax and revenue options will impact the economy, importantly, as well as various sectors and create stability for the state. And I'm by no means a tax expert, but from my perspective, a quick implementation of a tax at the gross receipts level or at the corporate activity level is a complex matter, and that other states that have undertaken it have implemented over multiple years. I think there are part of the complexity, of course, is in understanding how businesses can accommodate the state's implementation of an additional tax to the current tax structure, but also the complexity comes in the way the tax affects various industries and the interest in not creating the kind of the obvious winners and losers and having adverse implications for various industries that may may be creating jobs and good family wage incomes for folks in corners of the state, all over the place. So the complexity comes in the timing and implementation and the impact across various different industries and the laddering effects and so forth of a tax at the gross receipts level.
Follow up. Thank you. And I don't want to put words in your mouth, and I'm certainly not going to attempt to do that, but would it be safe to say that the business response today to a gross receipts tax is not necessarily no, but not yet?
Co-Chairs Hassan, Barnhart, and Representative Johnson, I appreciate the phrasing, and I would say yes. As I attempted to communicate earlier, we believe that, and we are interested in participating in a process that evaluates all options. And we're interested in bringing to bear our resources and policy expertise and marrying that with the great expertise that exists within the legislature to evaluate all options and to come up with the right long-term solution to get us all where we want to go.
Thank you. Representative Buehler.
Yeah, thank you, Chair House. I hate to speak in opposition to the birthday representative today, but in all due respect, the we of version 12 I find a little disconcerting. Certainly this representative hasn't been involved in those discussions. The first time we really saw the version of the CAT was here last week, which it's not even a bill, it's a LC, right? And it's over 100 pages long. And I think in the course of those discussions, there's a lot of questions in my mind about the concept. What about the administrative and enforcement difficulties of sales coming into Oregon from around the world? I think that's a legitimate question. What's the effects on startups in the state that have really high gross receipts but very little profit at the end of the day? What's the effects on small business? That could be taxed on their gross receipts, and then if they're a pass-through on their income. What's the effects on healthcare? I think we saw that in our questioning. Why do we, release the high-cost cancer drugs, but not drugs for hepatitis and HIV treatment? And I don't think, and those are just some of the questions I can recall that have come up. But also, why haven't we fully vetted why states such as Indiana and New Jersey have gone away from a gross receipts tax. And then I think we are also having difficulty settling what is a problem set that we're trying to solve. Is it stability? Is it adequacy? Is it a combination of those? If it's just stability, I think there's other ways to attack the problem. And I think Senator Haas has done this 10 years ago or so when they looked at this problem before. And why aren't we vetting a real robust rainy day fund as a potential solution to at least the stability problem of it? So to say that we fully vetted this, and I respect Senator Riley's question, or comments also, but I think it's a leap of faith that it's been fully vetted. No question there. More comment.
Senator Taylor.
Thank you, Chair Haas. I'm sorry, I was late. We were at a happy moment in the legislature having a bill signing ceremony with the governor for the Oregon Equal Pay Act, so I'm sorry I was not here for your presentation. But I just had a question. Maybe this was covered, but can you I was just looking through here for clarification about for the corporate tax increase, is this something that you're thinking would be for both S-Corp and C-Corps, or what or would be equally, would be equal, or what were you, what was the thinking there? I'm sorry, maybe I missed it.
So co-chairs Haas and Barnhart and Senator Taylor, I'm glad to hear there's happy moments in this legislative session. So I know it's getting tense and you're all working hard down here. So, the corporate income tax implication is C Corp. Is C Corp.
Okay. So you follow up. Sorry.
Follow up.
I have a couple questions actually. Chair Haas. So are you wanting to? Because there seems to be, I'm not sure everyone's having in the same school of thought in the business community about the increase of the S Corp and C Corp. So can you just expand on what you're envisioning a little bit more? Please?
Yeah, and so, sorry, co-chairs and Senator Taylor, what I would like to do is to, revert to the comments I made earlier about our interest in having our policy experts engage with the work that you're doing and with your expertise here to work towards what I think would be a common objective as a broad a base of tax implicate or tax implementation for the kind on the kinds of in the kinds of policy preferences and framework that we've provided here.
Okay, follow up, Chair. Thank you, Chair. So. I'll just speak for myself. Through this process and serving on the Revenue Committee, all sorts of people come to see us in our offices, et cetera. And what I have found somewhat frustrating, it may just be because there's changes going on in the business community between AOI and OBA and et cetera, but when there doesn't seem, in my opinion, to be a unified business voice. And so when although I appreciate you saying you'd like to work with us, I do agree with Representative Smith Warner, it's June 1st, welcome, we're glad that you're here. But who, can you kind of explain to me what you think of when you think of the business community and who would be coming forward, just so that we understand, please.
Yeah, co-chairs and Senator Taylor, thank you for the question. The coalition form to support the business plan framework is broad, includes business associations that I named earlier from across the state, many chambers, many individual businesses. I'd like to say a couple things. One is that the business community clearly is not a homogeneous entity. Different corporate structures, different tax structures, different business organizations, and again, speaking to the complexity of implementing new taxes. What I would expect every business to be doing would be to evaluating the impact of any new tax legislation on their individual business, as well as on its implications for our shared long-term objectives for the state. So in that process, some businesses are going to have a different point of view about what should be implemented and different, there will be some complexity about how a new tax would affect various businesses, clearly, as I'm sure you appreciate. So there's really no way for me, and nor did I claim to sit here and represent every business and every business structure in the state. I'm fully expecting that you all are having conversations with various businesses. What I can tell you is that what we've done with this coalition is put down in concrete terms the various positions, commitment to work, policy work, fund policy work that we think can be supportive of the process, and a commitment to be part of the process, and we have broad commitment to doing that. So we're going to have throughout any process, we're going to have businesses looking and exploring their various options. The other thing that I would like to note, if I can, is that I very much appreciate the opportunity to sit here in front of you and to testify on this topic. We have been, as was noted earlier, we have been very engaged with various legislators and other key stakeholders for months and months. If we haven't found the right way to be productive and constructive and supportive of the process, then I apologize for that. But that's very much been our intent for quite a while.
Okay. Just the last question. Thank you, Chair Hesse. So this is considered the Joint Tax Reform Committee. I have yet to find someone who thinks that the Oregon business tax structure is, or our revenue structure, period, is one that another state wants to replicate. And so what I commend Chair Hass for is recognizing, and Representative Barnhart, for recognizing the seriousness of how unsustainable our tax structure is. And so one of the things I'm somewhat concerned about in just reading really quickly through your proposal here is that it doesn't seem to really address our need to reform the revenue structure for the state. And so in building on what Representative Bueller brought up, some of the things that we're trying to solve is that we are not providing the services that, at least I would argue as an individual, need to be served. We have people who are in desperate need of services. We have education that needs to be funded. We have a need in higher education. We have all sorts of programs through the natural resources. I mean, the needs are endless. And so just because it's not necessarily, when we're talking about a budget cap, that's just for a current service. I mean, there's additional needs definitely throughout the state. And so I'm trying to understand in this proposal, if we want to develop a sustainable revenue package, revenue program going forward, how is this doesn't seem to have enough reform in our revenue structure. So I'm trying to understand how we're going to change that going forward. Can you talk about that a little bit, please?
Yeah, Co-Chairs Hass and Barnhart and Senator Taylor, thank you for the opportunity to address that. I recognize that there's a long list that has been presented about the shortcomings of the Oregon State kind of tax, overall tax and revenue structure. And, you know, as we look out, as I showed earlier, as we look out, we see strong revenue growth and even faster cost growth. So the point you're making about, funding vital services today, but also long term, I agree 100% with you and think that both sides of that equation need to be addressed. On the topic of whether Oregon's tax structure is the right structure for the long term, I agree that it needs to be carefully evaluated, studied, and addressed from the standpoint of broad base and stability. And I applaud the work that's been done to look at solutions for those issues. We don't believe that, for many of the reasons that Representative Bueller said better than I did when I answered the question, we don't believe that there is time in this legislative session to vet all of the implications, with all due respect for the tremendous amount of work that's gone on before. And what we're proposing is that with cost containment, there is a near-term revenue solution that can fund additional educational investments, and that we are pledging and very much interested in being engaged in the conversation around the long-term, the right long-term solution.
Representative Hernandez.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. First, happy birthday, Representative Barbara Smith Warner. So sorry I was late. I also came from voting no on the $8.2 billion budget for education, because I don't think we are adequately funding our education system and have historically not done that. And I am a product of that. I went to K-12 schools here in Oregon from 93 to 2012, and graduated with $70,000 in debt, went to six different elementary schools and three different middle schools, and faced the inadequacy, right, of our public education system. But luckily I had great teachers who had my back. So my question to you, you know, I'm new here, I'm a freshman, just got elected, and everything that I've learned about the corporate income tax system is that it's inadequate, it's unstable, it's unsustainable, and most Oregonians that I've spoken to do believe that businesses are not paying their fair share. So knowing that, and knowing that we're facing billions in deficits in the coming bienniums, how does this proposal compare to the commercial activities tax in terms of stability and adequacy?
So co-chairs Haas and Barnhart and Representative Hernandez, thank you for the question. So I think two parts to your question, if I can. In terms of the long-term stability and adequacy, well, first of all, let me say that I know there is broad business support for additional funding for education, to drive key outcomes for our children, pre-K, K through 12, higher education. So there is broad agreement that we would like to see more funding directed at outcomes for Oregon's children. With regard to the adequacy and stability of the specific policy preferences that I presented here, we believe that with cost containment and Medicaid solutions that balance the budget such that those additional tax revenues can go to education, as you're calling for, that it's a feasible and reasonable implementation in this biennium to get additional education funding. Now, we also are committed to be at the table whenever you want to call us and however you want to use us, to look at issues around long-term stability and adequacy of funding for education in the tax system.
Follow up, Mr. Chair?
Follow up.
You did mention cost containment and Medicaid. Can you give examples of exactly what cost containment you're speaking about particularly, and also examples of where we have not sought Medicaid reimbursement where it has not worked, and just to get more clarity?
Co-chairs Haas and Barnhart and Representative Hernandez, thank you for the question. So, as I've mentioned on revenue, on the cost side, we're very interested in engaging and being helpful with specific solutions. I presented a list earlier that showed, I know you were doing something else, so it's, but I presented a list earlier that showed key cost drivers around, you know, PERS and employee state employee health care costs. I know there's also another list, there's a list of other key cost drivers, and we're very interested in being supportive in evaluating the specific implementation of cost containment to achieve those objectives. And so I think it's presumptive for me to say here's the exact solution, so I'm intentionally stopping short of that, although we have a lot of policy work and analysis that we think will be helpful in the process. On the Medicaid solutions piece, the healthcare industry is very engaged, as are we, in looking for solutions that optimize, federal match, cut costs where they can be cut, and where needed, raise additional revenues to preserve the additional level of service that was implemented with the Medicaid expansion, and allowing hundreds of thousands more Oregonians to be covered. So we're supportive of that work that's going on. We've been very engaged with it. I know it's a complex issue, but the goal there is to sustain and even improve over time the level of service provided through the Medicaid system and ensuring that 95% of Oregonians, as we've achieved recently, 95% of Oregonians are covered. So, you know, I know that I'm not, you're asking me for specific policy, on the cost containment side in particular and on Medicaid. My interest is in reiterating our commitment to be engaged in that policy development in whatever way is helpful to the process.
Co-Chair Barnhart, and then Bart Trigger and Smith, and then we'll close down.
Thank you. Thank you very much for coming today. Very much appreciate your presentation. I'm especially thankful for the support of the businesses that you're working with for education funding. It's what brought me here in 2001, thinking that we were going to be able to restore the funding to the K-12 school system that had been cut as a result of Measures 5 and 50. And of course, that hasn't happened yet. And of course, you know very well, and so do the other business people here, that the effect of that on our economy and on individuals is profound. Dropout rates are too high, and all the other things that you already know about. I'm also thankful for the support that reform of our criminal justice system to reduce costs and to reduce recidivism that you mentioned. That's a huge cost driver for us, and of course, part of our difficulty is that an out-of-date method for managing public safety is enshrined in the Oregon Constitution. And makes it difficult for the legislature to actually move on these things. Your support for that movement, according to modern understandings of what actually works for recidivism, would be extremely helpful for us, and it would reduce our costs on the cost side. I have to tell you that I was a skeptic. We've been working on the plan that we were not going to get to today the commercial activities tax approach that's been working successfully in Ohio for some time. I was a skeptic about moving toward that. We've been working on it, as I think Senator Riley said, for 5 years, and that's true. We have been. I finally took the deep dive at the beginning of this session, working with Senator Hass and with others to study this issue in much greater detail. And again, I'm sorry you're not going to get the presentation this morning on the most recent version of that, because I think you would discover that it will actually produce a substantially better economy with a more stable revenue system and generate some needed revenue toward dealing with the things we agree upon, adequately funding education. I was a skeptic. I'm not anymore. I think we have worked through the problems that you're concerned about. I'm sorry that the businesses you represent have taken so much time to talk among themselves and haven't been in to see me, at least, about your reservations or concerns, because I'd love to know in much greater detail what they are. And I'm also very interested in having you understand what progress we've actually made in pursuing this plan that Senator Hass has been championing, and I greatly appreciate it. I'm really at a loss to understand how we're going to deal with the short-term problem that we have with the proposals that you've presented. Given what I understand of it, we're at least several hundred million dollars short of actually plugging the holes this year. Nobody's mentioned the university system yet, but the University of Oregon's in my district, so I pay attention. Several of the universities this year have double-digit tuition increases. That's a sign of significant financial distress for the universities. And we're talking about a couple hundred million dollars that ought to be spent this in this coming biennium. to reduce that tuition increase and to otherwise support the university system. Are there other things other than what you've mentioned that you're just simply not ready to talk about today that would be helpful in closing those additional holes while in this coming biennium, or are we going to have to make very significant cuts in a whole lot of areas in order to balance this budget?
Co-Chair Haas, Co-Chair Barnhart, thank you for the question. We believe that with the list of cost containment items and the Medicaid solutions under discussion, that the current budget gap can be closed, and that with the set of tax options that I've listed here today, that the kind of revenue that we've cited for additional investment in education can be raised. We're very interested in engaging immediately in more detailed problem solving and solution development, and over the long term, to the extent that we can be useful in the work that you've been doing for years on the Oregon tax system.
Thank you. Thank you, Mr. Chair.
Thank you, Senator Bertschinger.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. First, I'd like to respond a little bit to Representative Hernandez's statement. As a business owner for over 40 years, when I hear general statements that the business community don't pay their fair share, I really set back by those general statements, because I don't think that's the case at all. As a response to this, I've been working with Senator Haas on this for several years. It's a very big lift. I think that there's a lot of merit still. I hear people, I know we're in some sort of desperation to get something passed. And any time in my life experiences, if you get desperate to do something, you usually make mistakes. And I think it does need to be more vetted. Now, I'm going to say something to this panel that's been lurking in the back of my head for 2 years that I've never said before in a meeting. If we change the way we raise revenue based on the projections, and they're good projections by staff, but business and people are going to react to these policies. And Mr. Chair, what happens if we come up short? Then we're really in a spot. So I know there's many people that are discouraged by how slow we're moving, but we can't afford mistakes. And so I appreciate you coming in here and hitting the pause button, because I think there is much, much more discussion and much more exploration of what could happen or may happen, and that's going to take time. Thank you, Mr. Chair.
Thank you, Senator Bertschinger. Well, collaboration with business is essential, with unions, with labor. This is, I think, how we avoid initiative measures on both sides. Yeah. And I think, Mr. Kreiser, what you're looking at here is potentially the last stop before the next ballot measure. So, I very much appreciate you and the businesses that you represent coming before our committee today. You didn't have to do this, and you did. So thank you. Thank you, committee members. Until we post another notice for another meeting, we're going to adjourn. Thank you. Adjourn.